child grows up to be somebody that just loves to learn. And another child grows up to be somebody.
Freddie Stone, the guitarist for Sly and the Family Stone, one of the brothers of the Family Stone, A Family Affair. He was born on this day in 1946. Good year to be born. Also one of the great singers of all time. We're here now with Marilyn Mosby, running for to become the next Baltimore City State's Attorney. Marilyn, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
And folks, join us now, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. I think I left my phone in the room, but I'm sure that my producer will follow my tweets and let me know when they come in. 410-319-8888. So, Marilyn, good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
This campaign is heating up here at the end.
It is.
Let's talk about the essential differences between you and Mr. Bernstein and why. We've talked once before a long time ago, a while back, about why you chose to run. And people say, oh, she's too young to run. She doesn't have enough behind her to be able to run the state's attorney's office.
Well, I mean, I can say this. I come from a long line of police officers, my mother, my father, my grandfather, my great uncles. So law enforcement is something that's been ingrained within my being. But besides that, I've always been a public servant. Since my cousin was killed, he was, you know.
In front of you, I heard. Is that right?
It was actually, I was in the home. I heard the gunshot. I opened up the door. It was in broad daylight. This is my cousin who grew up with me like a brother when I was 14 years old. He was shot outside of our home. I opened up the door. I saw the individual running, and I was scared. I saw my cousin laying in the street. I closed the door. I opened the door again, and I realized it was my cousin. I say all that because if it wasn't for the testimony of a witness in the community who not only cooperated with police, but he testified in court, our family wouldn't have received any sort of justice. And my cousin and I had aspirations of being first generation college students. So it was devastating for me at 14 years old to lose somebody so close to me. But what was even more devastating was the fact that you had a 17-year-old who is now with aspirations of being an architect and going to college, going to a grave. The person responsible for killing him was also 17 years old, and he was now going to prison for the rest of his life. So that was my first introduction to the criminal justice system. I knew that I wanted to reform a system that disproportionately affects so many people. And I said, is it better to work within the system? Or is it better to work outside the system? So recognizing that, I've worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston, the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., the Suffolk County Homicide Unit. And I started my career right here in Baltimore City, where for over 6 years, I worked day in and day out as a prosecutor right here in Baltimore. And I can tell you, I had an 80% conviction rate. I had a lot of success in the state's attorney's office. But when it comes to experience, I am the only person in this race with experience.
What do you mean, the only person with experience?
I mean, I am the only person as a prosecutor with Circuit Court. I have more experience as a prosecutor in Baltimore City Circuit Court than the current incumbent, his two deputies. And I can tell you that I actually trained, you know, some of his current division chiefs. I was the supervisor of the Early Resolution Court for Baltimore City, where I was training newly sworn ASAs on courtroom decorum and docket management. So when it comes to experience, I think that I have more experience. I know that I have more experience than the current incumbent. I have the perspective of actually having the trial experience in addition to the management experience.
Let me talk about some of the things that you're raising in this campaign and talk about what they mean and also some of the politics of some of the stuff I've been reading by some of your supporters and ask you questions about that as well.
Sure.
Let's start with your critique of the violent offender program, the VRO, you're saying it's mismanaged. You're saying it's not working, and that's a huge accusation to throw out at the state's attorney, the state, and the police. What are you saying?
What I'm saying is that all you have to do is turn on your news and open up the newspaper, and you see that it's not working. I can give you a number of examples in which we're. You look at the individual who was responsible for beating the man in the face with a brick to the point where he had 9 skull fractures and 8 to 10 broken teeth. That individual was already charged with armed robbery and assault. He was his case was placed on the inactive docket, which is why he was out on the street. You look at Carter Scott, the 16-month-old that was killed last May, the individual responsible for shooting 16 times into the vehicle and killing that little baby. He just got off on murder charges in January. He was going after another individual who just got off on murder charges in October. You look at the 5-time serial rapist who was breaking into people's homes, raping women by knife point. He was doing that in my community. That individual, he's gotten off 4 times in the past 3 years. So when you come to me and you say that, you know, your MIU unit is doing
MIU,
all the MIU,
which means
it's an acronym that the current incumbent has come up with and created, and saying that he is touting his statistics, I find that rather peculiar, especially when you consider the fact that just 3 months ago, his statistics on his website, he had a disclaimer in which he said these statistics could not be relied upon. And so when we look at what's happening in our communities, you have to ask yourself, do you feel safe? And not only that, Mark, you asked me specifically about the violent repeat offender program. The police department just commissioned a report. Taxpayers just spent $285,000 on an independent report. And in the report, it says that the violent repeat offender program has lost its impetus in the past few years. So it's not just me who thinks that this is a problem. The state's attorney's office is indicating in the report that the police department is responsible for maintaining this list of violent repeat offenders. And the police department is blaming the state's attorney's office. We all know that at the end of the day, when we turn on the news, we open up the newspaper, it's a small number of violent repeat offenders wreaking havoc in our communities and giving our city a bad name.
So what? How do you change that? I mean, everybody who's come through this doorway over the last 21 years, state's attorneys and police commissioners, mayors have all said we're going to end this. So what are you going to do that's different that's going to really put a dent in any of this?
Well, clearly there's a disconnect. I mean, we have that in that $285,000 report that we just commissioned. And I can tell you that in the first 100 days of my administration, it's sitting down with the police department, developing a comprehensive process in which we are targeting these individuals. It's not like we don't know who they are. I can't tell you how many community association meetings I've gone to and community members are saying, we know who the murderers are walking around the streets. What are you going to do to get them off the streets? So that's first and foremost. We need to target these individuals. The other thing that I'm going to be pushing for is truth in sentencing, conforming Maryland law with federal law, where when we're talking about individuals who have been convicted of second-degree murder, these individuals should be serving 85% of their time. And I intend to push for that. I know I can give you the example of the individual who was just recently responsible for shooting the police officer charged with second-degree murder in 2003, yet he's already out on the street. That's problematic. That's something that I will be pushing for. I can tell you with the 5-time serial rapist, the one who the first time he got off, and oftentimes we want to blame the police, but the police get these individuals off the street. It's up to the state's attorney's office to seal the deal and get the convictions. The first time that individual got off, it took him just 60 days before he broke into 3 other homes and raped 3 other women. You have to send a message to individuals like that. So as a lay citizen, I took sexual assault survivors, child abuse survivors to Annapolis so that we could conform Maryland laws to, once again, federal laws, because the federal laws recognize that when you're talking about child molestation, when you're talking about sex offense, these individuals usually have a pattern of predatory behavior. And so their prior bad acts and those accusations where he's been accused of breaking into 4 other homes and raping women by knife point, that information should be admissible in front of a jury. And that's what I'm going to be pushing for. That's how you go after those violent repeat offenders. It's about showing leadership.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Marilyn Mosby is with us. She is running to become the Democratic candidate for state's attorney in this June 24th election coming up. Her opponent, Mr. Bernstein, is now the sitting state's attorney. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I know you have questions for Marilyn Mosby. Every time we have this conversation, her name comes up. What are your questions? For support or not? What do you think? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us as we talk with Marilyn Mosby. So let's go through this a bit here. I mean, I think that this is one thing you mentioned here was the case. You didn't mention name, but I will. Nelson Bernard Clifford, the man who was accused of 4 rapes.
Yep.
And
5 rapes.
5, excuse me.
He's currently awaiting trial.
For a third one. A fifth one.
Fifth one.
Is he still he's incarcerated waiting for trial?
He's incarcerated awaiting for trial.
So talk a bit about what you see as the issue here when it comes to the law. I mean, I was really interested in an article that Lynn McLean wrote in the Daily Record last November, on evidence rules in rape cases unfair to victims and to jurors, where she's saying that the Maryland law makes it difficult for a man like Bernstein or a woman like Mosby to run an office and conflate the cases, like take the cases of all five women and put them in one trial, or to allow the testimony of those women in from those other alleged rapes to testify again to show a pattern here, so the jury might see who this guy really is. I mean, that's the heart of the problem, right?
Absolutely, that's the heart of the problem. So in essence, these women who were violated in every sense of the word, they were basically would have the courage and the audacity to testify against this man who broke into their home, held them by knife point, would break in through the window, and every single time he had the same sort of modus of operandi. And these women would have the courage to do that, and this man gets on the stand every single time, and he says, yeah, my DNA evidence is there, but these women consented to having intercourse with me. And the jury is not aware of the fact that he's been accused of doing this four other times or five other instances. So the Maryland law, the way it is right now, is that there are narrow exceptions in which you can get this information in. But when you look at the federal law, and that's what I was explaining earlier, the federal law recognizes that when you're talking about sexual assault, when you're talking about child molestation, it's important to recognize that those individuals usually have a pattern of predatory behavior. And so it's not, there aren't as many hurdles to getting that evidence into the record for juries to be able to hear.
So but what is your critique of, and then we'll go to the first phone call here, Ms. Judy, we'll call after this one response. So what is your critique of Greg Bernstein in this? Why aren't his hands as tied as yours you would be, given the state of the law?
Well, I think that there are a number of critiques that I have. First and foremost, one of the things that the current incumbent did when he ran is that he said he was going to personally get into court and try these cases. As I stated before, Nelson Clifford, the first time this individual got off, he had that much more bravado. He was bigger and he was badder. He had beat the system. So it took him 60 days before he broke into three other homes and raped three other women. Mr. Bernstein did not get into trial the first time he got off, the second time he got off, the third time he got off, or the fourth time he got off. I can tell you that it would have sent a message to an individual like that if the top prosecutor got into court personally and said, I'm going to go after you. That was not done. Furthermore, this individual who's currently awaiting trial for the fifth time, there was no leadership in trying to change the laws, seeing and recognizing that this is a problem. Clearly, this is a problem that this individual is wreaking havoc in our communities. Nothing was done. I called on the current state's attorney to do something, change the laws. That is your job. If you see it as a problem and it's affecting the constituents that have elected you, you need to do something about it. Push for changes in the law. That was not done. I did that.
So are you accusing Greg Bernstein of not pushing in the state legislature to have the law changed to allow these kind of cases to be heard in the way that others have critiqued it, by allowing several women who have accused one person of rape to testify together to have that evidence admitted? Is that what you're saying he did not
do? What I'm saying is that he should be showing proactive leadership in trying to go after this individual. This is a violent, repeat offender, the one that he touts and says that he's going after, yet...
Well, one thing that means I wasn't clear what I was saying. Let me be clear. Are you saying that the current state's attorney refused to fight in the state legislature to have the law changed? Is that what are you saying?
No,
that?
Okay. he actually took my lead. After I called on him to do it, okay, he attempted to do so.
Okay.
But I can tell you that the laws in which he was seeking to change were very different than the law that I was calling on him to change.
Gotcha.
My legislation that I introduced and testified before the Judiciary Committee was a lot less burdensome for victims, and that's the legislation that I was calling the current state's attorney to come and to change.
Gotcha. I understand. Let's go open the phones here. 410-319-8888. And we can lay this up sometimes at Chairman Valerio's doorstep as well, for not letting things even out of committee. 410-319-8888. Miss Judy, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Miss Mosley, I'm calling to tell you that I'm so proud of you, and you are going to get my vote.
Thank you so much, Miss Julie. I really appreciate that.
And we need a state attorney who's just like you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. 410-319-8888. We'll come to these other calls coming in just a moment. So what about the politics of this and the disparity between the money you've been able to raise and the money that that the current state's attorney has raised?
Well, I can tell you that I've been talking to the voters for the past year. I announced in June 24th of 2013, and I can tell you that 47% of the voters are not happy with the job that the current incumbent is doing. And I can also tell you that you can't buy this election. People want change. People want to feel safe in their communities. And I can tell you as a wife, you know, I get concerned when my husband goes out the door. He's a councilman in the city, but I get concerned. We live in the heart of West Baltimore. As a mother, I have two little girls that I'm raising in the heart of West Baltimore. There was just a murder that was one street over from us. 6 months ago, my car was cordoned off in police tape. So as a resident of West Baltimore, I don't have to turn on the news and open up the newspaper to see the violence plaguing our communities. And as a former prosecutor, I know and I understand that the priorities of the state's attorney's office are completely off. It is time to prioritize. And when I say that, you know, rather than focus on comfy office space, that was the top priority of the current administration. He lobbied the city. He lobbied the state. He got $11 million during a structural deficit when we're closing schools and we're closing rec centers to move from the Mitchell Courthouse to the Trust Building. And Mark, he said he was doing this to better protect victims and witnesses. But guess where the victim witness room still is? The Mitchell Courthouse. That is problematic. It's about priorities.
We have calls coming in. As soon as I get the name on line one, I'll get the person on the phone. Ali, let's go. Can we go line? We have time for one? Yes, do that. 410-319-8888. Ali on line one, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, Ali.
Mark. I think last night I seen a story on, I think it was WBAL, in reference to the state's attorney wife having some type of communication with a high-ranking police officer. I'm wondering, does Ms. Mosley have any comment in reference to that particular issue, being that the Baltimore City Police Department is supposed to be a partner, a crime-fighting partner, in this whole scenario of targeting violent repeat offenders?
Well, I don't know too much about the details of the WBAL, I guess, story, but I do know that there were some sort of emails that were exchanged between top commanders in the police department and the current incumbent's wife, which I would assume is, you know, contradictory to his role. And it kind of, for lack of a better term, it didn't seem like they were working in conjunction as a state's attorney. I think that they were making light of the positions and some of the leadership roles in which the current commissioner was taking. But I don't know too much about
that.
Yeah,
I don't either.
Too many details.
I'm sorry, I'm really not aware of much of that. Someone wrote in here, Mosby's person. I'll read that in a second. Soon we'll come back, Rick. So I thought it was a message from a listener. It was not. 410-319-8888. We'll come back. We'll get your calls in here at 410-319-8888. We have a tweet from Matt Gonder. He said, Marilyn, was it? I'm not sure who that is, but Marilyn, was it?
He's my friend. He loves me.
I think you're being
facetious.
He
follows
me. I got you.
Yeah.
He said, Marilyn, was it appropriate for you to hand out literature outside of a community meeting where Stephen Rawlings Blake, after our neighbor, was murdered?
Okay. And I would say this. The reason why I attended the Southeast meeting is because I think it was extremely important for me to be there. As a, I'm running for a citywide office that had to do with public safety. And for me to go to that meeting, I thought it was very important for people to understand and to know that, you know, I'm there. We have got to change and make alternatives to what's happening in our community. The police commissioner was there. The mayor was there. Mr. Bernstein was not. And I think that when we look at the crises across the city on a number of occasions, when we experienced the rise in crime last summer, once again, the mayor was out there knocking on doors. The police commissioner was out there knocking on doors. And the state's attorney was nowhere to be found. That is going to be the difference between me and the current incumbent. When we are in a state of crisis, I will be there because I represent the constituents of every part of this city. And we can't do this alone. It takes the police commissioner. It takes the mayor. It takes the community and it takes the state's attorney. I think that has been the biggest problem, is there's been a lack of presence and visibility throughout various communities in Baltimore. So I think that's the difference between me and Mr. Bernstein. And I'm not going to be deterred by the fact that, you know, people think that I shouldn't be there. I'm running for a citywide office that affects public safety. I'm going to attend any and every public safety meeting that I need to attend.
We're going to take a quick break and come right back with Marilyn Mosby, who's seeking to become the next city state's attorney. Pardon me, I'm sorry. City state's attorney here in Baltimore City. We're going to go out on this day with Elvis Presley's Hound Dog on this day in 1956. He premiered that song on the Milton Berle Show and was scandalized, all these old white folks watching, because he gyrated his hips. We'll be right back.
On a cloudy day, 'tis the sun that loves you brown. When the system tries to break you down, never had the shine at night. Don't be darkness to do what you think is right.
Everybody is a star. Yes, they are. And we have Marilyn Mosby in the studio. And by that was Sign the Family Stone. Freddie Stone was born this day in 1946. 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones and get callers in here.
Sure.
410-319-8888. Rick, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
I'd like to apply Miss Mosby, because what she said is true. It's 100% true that she said about repeat offenders. I had some property stolen from me by a repeat offender. I went through court, and it was just kept continuing, getting postponed and postponed. But this guy who stole this property, he was a repeat offender. And I noticed that this is happening with our youth, with our juveniles. You find a lot of juveniles today, they're doing the same thing. They're repeat offenders. It seems like in this city, it's a pattern with our adults and with our youth.
Okay. So, do you have a question, Rick?
Question to Ms. Mosby. I want to know: does she find that true? I know she's working with adults. Does she find that true with our youth too?
Absolutely, Rick. I think you're hitting the nail on the head. It's a problem not only with adults but also youth. We have got to address it, and at the end of the day, we know these individuals. We need to start targeting and focusing on these individuals, but recognizing that the youth issue is a problem. I think that one of the reasons why I became a prosecutor is because of the awesome discretion that prosecutors have, that not only affect the defendant and the victim, but have collateral consequences on our community. Recognizing that, you know, one of the things that I believe that we should do, in addition to focusing on these violent repeat offenders, is also try to get to our children before they get to the criminal justice system. And by that, I mean, I think there are ways in which the prosecutor's office can deal with our children without getting them enshrined in the criminal justice system. We know what happens when our young people oftentimes make poor decisions, right? And we know that young people think about instant gratification. They're not really thinking about the long term. So they see the bling bling and they want to get out there and they make poor decisions. So recognizing that that is a problem. And when they get these felony convictions, we know what happens. It serves as like a scarlet letter. They can no longer apply for jobs. They can no longer apply for housing. They can no longer even get student loans. So what other option do they have but to go back out into the communities? Some of these young people have to take care of their families, you know, and to wreak havoc. So recognizing that the prosecutor does play a role in that, I want to introduce a program called Back on Track. It was actually first introduced by Attorney General Kamala Harris when she was the San Francisco District Attorney. And this program is designed where you partner with the business community and you partner with unions. I've been endorsed by the AFL-CIO, which are all the major labor unions in the state. And what I can tell you is that this partnership would allow, and the program would focus on first-time, nonviolent felony offenders, where you go through a probationary period and you not only learn life skills and job training skills and you do a heck of a lot of community service, but at the end of that probationary period, you're given a job, and not just a $5 an hour fast food restaurant job, a job where you can take care of your families and with benefits. And at that felony conviction that is often used as a scarlet letter to keep you away from society and introduced back into society, that felony record is wiped clean. Those are the sorts of programs that we need implemented in our city so that we can then focus on these violent repeat offenders.
410-319-8888. John, you're on the air.
I want to ask a question. I have a lot of friends who are lawyers here in the city. And my question is that because Bernstein was a defense attorney and you have spent, I guess, most of your career as a prosecutor, is there a big difference between starting off as a defense attorney and now trying to be a prosecutor? Is there any ethical things that maybe Mr. Bernstein isn't doing? Because I hear some friends saying that he's destroying the state's attorney's office.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that from my experience, I think it's good to have a well-rounded perspective. You know, that's one of the things that I did in addition to working in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston, the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., the Suffolk County Homicide Unit. I also served as a defense attorney for a year while I was still in school. And the reason why is because I wanted a well-rounded perspective. I didn't just want one perspective. I can tell you that, you know, having the experience that I have, I recognize that, you know, I have a different perspective as a prosecutor. I am the person in this race who has the experience to get into court, and I know at the end of the day, these individuals that we should be focusing on, the priorities of the office. I'm not sure from the perspective of the current incumbent. I know that he was a white-collar criminal defense attorney for 30 years. Maybe that shows his inexperience as a prosecutor. I'm not quite sure. I just know that the priorities of the state's attorney's office are off.
Before we run out of time in this segment, I want to ask you about one of the big issues here that we've always talked about is victim witness protection.
Yes.
Which has always been a problem in the city.
Yes.
From Stop Snitching On. So how, again, everybody I've ever interviewed said, we're going to create these programs, we're going to do this to change this.
Well, Mark, I mean, this is the home, you just hit the nail on the head. This is the home of witness intimidation where the stop snitching mentality began.
Right.
We should be focusing on victim witness services. I know, I just told you my personal experience, you know, with my cousin being killed. I know how important that is to grieving families. You look at Tyrone West, you look at Anthony Anderson, you know, these families, there's a lack of transparency in the state's attorney's office. You know, the victim witness services has not been the top priority. Imagine what $11 million could have done towards victim witness services and witness intimidation. Well, I can tell you that I'm going to develop a premier victim services unit in Baltimore City. I can tell you that I'm going to work with the state legislators. I'm going to work with the city legislatures in the same way the current incumbent lobbied and got $11 million to move into a comfy office space. Is the same way that I'm going to lobby these legislators to work towards witness intimidation and victim witness services. We need it. We need it. We need it in our city.
Very quick call. James, on line two, you're on the air. We only have a few minutes left, so please go right into it.
Hello?
James, yeah, very fast because we don't have much time.
Yes, I heard you talk a lot about fear, and I just want to caution you in your message. I haven't made my decision up, so I'm still looking at you and Mr. Bernstein, but it kind of sounds like a little of that Republican rhetoric, and I love Baltimore. My home has been broken into 3 times. My car has been broken into 7 times, but I don't live in fear. I don't get up every day and walk out the door and be, you know, I'm concerned. I'm a concerned citizen, but I'm just saying watch that message because, you know, for folks like me that love Baltimore and see the positives here, don't get, you know, talk against the images outside of Baltimore, but that The Wire has presented. This is a beautiful city, so I'd like for you to talk a little bit more positively,
okay.
Maybe in your closing message about some of the positive things you see about Baltimore.
Let me just let her have her closing message. Go ahead.
Absolutely, James, and I truly appreciate that. There's nobody who understands and loves this city more than I do. I can tell you that my husband and I, we bought a vacant dilapidated 20-year vacant dilapidated shell in Reservoir Hill over 10 years ago. And you can remember what Reservoir Hill looked like 10 years ago. I love this city. You know, that is the reason why I'm here. That is the reason why I'm raising my two little girls in Baltimore. And I know that Baltimore is so much more than The Wire. I know and I understand that in order for us to grow our city, to build families, bring businesses to our city, we have to do something about the crime. And to realize the potential of our city, which is the greatest city in America. And I don't mean that in any sort of way, but the best way. It is. I can tell you that. I love my community. But at the end of the day, we have got to focus on the issues. And the issue is that the priorities of the state's attorney's office are completely off. It is time for change. It is time to realize the potential of our city. And we're not going to do that unless and until we do something about the crime. And that's why I need your support.
Marilyn Mosby, I hope we have some time to talk to you once again before the campaign's over. With our fingers crossed, looking at the calendar, we hope we do to get your message out. We've invited Mr. Bernstein on as well, and we'll continue to try to do that, to have this conversation. Marilyn Mosby is running to become the next city state's attorney for Baltimore City. Election day is June the 24th,
yes.
And if they want to get in touch with your campaign, how do they do it?
They can go to MarilynMosby.com, please.
That's simple.
That's simple. MarilynMosby.com. And my headquarters is 2200 Utah Place on the corner of Utah and North Avenue.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, good. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org, one word. And we're going to take a brief break here. We're going right into our next segment. Taking a brief break. We'll be right back. Coming right back, we are going out with Conway Twitty. Hello, darling. He died on this day. Stay with us. We'll be right back in just a second.
What's that, darling? How am I doing? I'm doing all right, except I can't sleep. And I cry all night till dawn. But I...